It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Brandon Thurston from WrestleNomics is up next, and we're going to follow Brandon with John Pollock from Post Wrestling.
Delivering on the returns, increasing our margins.
Ratings go down the toilet if I'm not here.
All I do is simply put the math in my favor.
We agree that Brandon and John do good work.
The reason is simple wrestling economics.
Told the Netflix numbers, I've been told the metrics a little bit, probably five different times, I still don't get it.
There were respectable wrestling journalists who needed answers.
Thank you very much, members of the media. I hope you all go to hell.
How about we pop a number right here, right now?
A whole part of the show, man.
Here we are for another edition of Pollock and Thurston. And I want to disclose to everyone up front, I'm a little under the weather today, and I'm going to do my best, but I want to give fair warning, okay? This is not an EMF-friendly show, okay? I think I've been taken down by certain electromagnetic waves.
I figured you'd just woken up.
I have been up for quite a while, and this is just the natural state of my voice today. But here we are to talk about everything going on in the world of professional wrestling and abroad. How are you, Brandon?
I'm fine. This is one of those episodes where I'm like, I haven't watched. I did turn on WrestlePalooza for a few minutes. I did do that.
Was that your whole intake of pro wrestling? The 9+ hours that WWE and AEW provided on Saturday, was that a couple minutes worth is what you took in?
Not counting the politics news that I've consumed, yes.
You know, it's been tough. We've been doing the show a couple of years, and I've been striving to find what does Brandon Thurston and Dana White have in common? And I think we have found it after Dana was asked about his fandom earlier this week by Logan Paul.
Do you watch it as a fan or as someone who understands the business and are watching it like more from an entertainment standpoint?
Yeah, I'm not a fan. I don't watch WWE. I don't watch it. So I'm into fighting, man. That's what I do.
So you and Dana, you might have beaten Dana by a few minutes on Saturday, but what an ambassador of TKO, Dana White. Yeah, I'm not into it.
He is interested in indie wrestlers becoming part of Power Slap, though.
Well, I was going to say, to any wrestling fans that get their back up against a wall over a comment like that, the man loved slap fighting. So, I mean, equals everything out. Well, we're going to get into everything that went down on Saturday, the fallout of WrestlePalooza versus All Out. Brandon, did you watch Jimmy Kimmel live on Tuesday night?
I did watch the monologue live last night.
Oh, you watched it live? See, yeah. My plan was to sit down, as I'm sure many were, to watch Jimmy Kimmel live for the first time in years.
You get it in Canada. You're not covered by Nexstar or Sinclair Broadcasting?
No, thankfully not. No, 20% of the U.S. didn't have access to this, so the great news for YouTube. I was so out of it on Tuesday night. I went to sleep at 10 o'clock last night. Okay. So I was old and sick, but did watch the entire monologue today. And this, at last check, this was at about 10 million views on YouTube this morning. So
I'm surprised there's no Fast Nationals out yet. Are there ratings news out yet? I'll look.
Yeah, we will see they're going to be hampered by the Sinclair and Nexstar affiliates. Isn't it great that this worldwide fear on what this means for the First Amendment in the U.S. It has brought Sinclair Broadcasting back into the discussion on a pro wrestling podcast.
Yes, the former parent company of Ring of Honor and Nexstar, no stranger to fans of professional wrestling media rights deals, the parent company of CW.
That's right. I mean, they're right in the thick of it. But I thought it was actually like a great monologue. I thought that it was well delivered. I think it hit on many different points and sounded, we will see what this means for the future of Jimmy Kimmel Live.
Yes, we will.
You have no more thoughts beyond that?
that we need to get into on a wrestling show. Maybe not. I think he was, I think there's some question around, like, is he going to come out and be more, sycophantic or more, you know, obsequious to
he Bauer. Was very protective of Disney in terms of their decision. Like he said, I disagreed with their decision, but we sat down, we spoke about it. I mean, he could have just gone nuclear on Disney, and I think he would have had a lot of support for such a rant. And I do have some level of understanding here that this is somebody that if he was canned tomorrow, this guy would be a massive star on digital platforms anywhere he went, but he's also got a staff of
hundreds,
like in the 150 to 200 range that are not necessarily going to land on their feet. And it's not so much just a Jimmy Kimmel decision, that there is a level of a tap dancing that you have to do around, you know, I think Disney came out horrifically over this past week and their decision not to back who has kind of become like the iconic figure of ABC in this generation. Like he is the person they put at their upfronts. He is somebody that is put in all of these. He's a much more public facing individual than Stephen Colbert is to CBS as a.
Has that show been on ABC for what did he say? 23 years.
It started in 2003. He got that slot. Yeah.
At the same time slot. 11:35.
No, he was on later.
Was he late night? Okay.
Then he got moved to up to 11:30 in the like past decade or so.
Okay. So he could have put Bob Iger on blast. Did not.
No, Dana Walden, Bob Iger, they were spared any verbal
and based on the statements from Nexstar, at least one of them, if not both, they didn't sound like they're shutting the door to airing him again, but they have not yet.
No, not yet. That's an interesting dance too, where I wonder, you know, it's obviously of great value to ABC to be able to have an entire network that covers the whole country. But there's also the aspect of just playing firm that you either carry him now or you don't carry him permanently. It's going to be quite the standoff that I imagine Sinclair and Nexstar will eventually acquiesce to this, and Kimmel will be back on the full coverage of the country. That would be my thought.
Or maybe we'll continue down this road of no more Twitter, but there's an X and there's a blue sky. And eventually we'll have ABC, NBC, CBS affiliates that are just airing completely different content, except for live sports. We'll always have the NFL that everyone will be interested in, I'm sure.
The great unifier, sports. There's no politics in sports.
No.
Well, let us move on to this past weekend. It was AEW All Out versus WWE WrestlePalooza, a fight to the death. Was there a casualty of this head-to-head contest, at least for 58 minutes, where we did get overlap between All Out and the start of WrestlePalooza? Was this let's start from the vantage point of AEW that had to move its show out of prime time and going up against the WWE's debut on the enhanced ESPN app. As R-Truth was instructing us on Friday night how to download this app and authenticate it and. Maybe
is that why he was putting his phone in the toaster?
Yeah. I think that was why. I wonder how many people followed that part of the process as well. They may have been as they were trying to download this app out of confusion. I maybe would have wanted to destroy my phone too if they were.
And Joe Tessitore made it sound like everybody gets access to this.
Not made it sound. Definitively said, if you have ESPN, nothing to worry about. You get it. I mean, Joe Tessitore had a rough week from that. He was promoting Lesnar and Cena as the main event of the show. I mean, he was not probably volunteering to be the messenger next time. But I think with the performance of All Out, we have to talk about it with a somewhat incomplete grade, because I think the most important number is how this fared on pay-per-view. And all we have to go on based is Tony Khan, who was extremely optimistic of what he had heard about.
Good vibes from Tony.
The launch on HBO Max, good vibes. But what that means across the board, we don't know. And that is ultimately how this is going to be viewed. But nonetheless, it was, according to Tony Khan, $1 million-plus gate at the Scotiabank Arena in Toronto with WrestleTix last number of 12,222 for the show.
Yes, I think these both had strong attendances. You know who won the attendance battle for the week, though?
CMLL.
CMLL, Anniversario, was the winner for the week. So Beyonce won the last WWE versus AEW fight, and now it's been CMLL. I mean, the reception to WrestlePalooza has been less than great, even ESPN giving it a grade of C.
We'll get into that later.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, WrestlePalooza, yeah, I think certainly from a show quality standpoint, there was a very clear-cut winner of the weekend. But for WrestlePalooza, I mean, the final number was 14,242 at the Gainbridge Fieldhouse. I would imagine this gate was a very significant one. I'm thinking that this probably topped $3 million that they did for this gate. Did you notice that you probably would not have seen this? Patrick Talty of the Indiana Sports Corporation featured ringside, got his own identification on camera.
Private entity, not a government entity, as far as I know. I did try at some point. I did look into records requests around this Indiana deal. I think that's, I mean, Corp tells you that's a private entity.
Yeah, Patrick Talty was formerly senior vice president at WWE about a decade ago, and now he's involved with the Indiana Sports Corp, which is the group that has essentially cultivated this deal with WWE to get all of these events into the state of Indiana.
I think we discovered that when this deal was announced, right, when they announced a Royal Rumble and a future WrestleMania. Relationships help.
They're very nice when you can leave the company and you become influential in when it comes to potential site fees. So going back to AEW at the post-show press conference, Tony Khan was asked by our own Davey Portman about the idea of permanently moving to afternoon start times for its pay-per-view events.
Would you consider it as a permanent move moving forwards?
It's definitely something to think about, especially on Saturdays with the way the schedule works and what we're doing. I do think there's something to it. It'd be something to consider also on some of the Sundays. It's been tremendous for three straight pay-per-views. I think the point you're making is definitely something I take into consideration. All in Texas, that early start time and having that manageable start time in the UK, it made sense. Then we were in London at the O2 for Forbidden Door, and that did have that same kind of domestic here in North America, that kind of afternoon start time like today's show, tonight's show. And that's the third straight pay-per-view that's had an afternoon start time in the East Coast, effectively, and the third straight pay-per-view that's been on in prime time in the UK. And we've had great results, great buys from the UK. The TV ratings in the UK are through the roof. Absolutely, that's a huge consideration to us. So that is a big part of it. And I'm really glad you asked that, because that's absolutely one of the considerations we've thought about here. And whether it's Saturday or Sunday, it's definitely given me something to think about.
So in a roundabout way, it's now the third straight show that AEW has run in the afternoon, only one of which would have been the afternoon regardless for Forbidden Door in England. But in the case of All in Texas and with this past weekend show, both were a direct result of WWE throwing its shows into primetime. And I think it has opened up this interesting option. And again, we don't have like the concrete info on how these pay-per-views are performing, but I think there's a lot less complaints about the length of this show, which if you include the tailgate brawl, that's 6 hours of wrestling. I think it's a lot easier for the fan to finish up at 8 p.m. versus 1 in the morning, especially on a Sunday night, for instance. And I would say if numbers for this WrestlePalooza, or sorry, for All Out are comparable to what they did for Forbidden Door a month ago, I would look at that as a huge victory on a show that you were not going to be the most promoted event of the day, and you were down several of your big stars like a Kenny Omega, a Swerve, a Will Ospreay, and putting in an inexperienced headliner and Kyle Fletcher into your main match as well. That I think that this may have inadvertently created an opportunity for AEW to find a different pay-per-view start time, and I think we'll have to wait until next year when their pay-per-view schedule is released to see if they tinker with the start times.
Yeah, it makes sense, and he's mentioning the factor with the UK. It's just a better time for them as opposed to starting at 8 p.m. Eastern, which is, what, midnight in London, right?
It's 5 hours sense. Ahead. I mean, it's crazy. Like, the UK audience that follows these North American products, like, mm-hmm. it's
they
insane.
Have problems, clearly, yeah.
I mean, it's a dedicated fan base, but, I mean, yeah, when you're moving into prime time, like, there are benefits worldwide. And if you're not harming your North American audience by too much of a factor, it may all just come out in the wash. That, I mean, I don't think they would have been testing this if not for WWE's decision to run these shows. And this may have created something for them, because I cannot foresee WWE going the extra step to move their shows up to like afternoon start times. I don't think ESPN's interested in that. I think for a lot of a variety of reasons, from other live event commitments on ESPN, that they are not going to want to adjust that as well, that AEW may have carved out something.
Certainly if they're running on Saturdays in the football season, I would imagine, well, there's football games on Saturday at primetime as well. But I think if for the American fan, like if you're, I would rather, if it's going to be a 6 hour show, I'd rather that start at 3 than at 7 or 8.
Yeah. I mean, Brandon's not sitting down just at any time, regardless, to watch 6 hours of pro
wrestling. If you want to get me to watch this show, and it's a hard sell, but if you want to get me to watch any show, it would be better if it did not end at 1 a.m. my time.
All right. We're going to talk about AEW's demographics a little later on with a linear regression model.
We'll be doing linear regression today by popular demand.
Yeah, that's called a hook for later on. Okay, that'll be at the crossover. When it comes to the coverage, let's go back a week ago, because right near the end of the ESPN media call, Brandon got in this question about the journalism at ESPN.
Is there reassurance you can provide to us that reporters who report on WWE for ESPN will still have full independence in how they cover WWE or even WWE's competitors for that matter?
Yeah, I think the answer to that is an emphatic yes.
Unequivocal yes. I mean, that's separation of church and state.
Church and state. That is the line in the sand. And so that takes us to ESPN's coverage of this show, going in and coming out of it. And Andreas Hale, who I think is a great combat sports reporter, he has been covering boxing forever. He covers MMA, and he also covers pro wrestling now on ESPN. And he gave his review of WrestlePalooza and was just excoriated online for how dare you give this event a grade of C, where he stated that the excellent Steffi Nivacare Io Sky match saved this show from being truly average. It was a phenomenal display inside the squared circle. Everything else was either underwhelming, the short Cody Rhodes-Drew McIntyre match, or a setup for a future match, Lesnar dominating Cena. For a card that promised to have epic moments, it fell a little short of expectations. So this, had this been on any other outlet, this would be a non-story. Nobody would talk about this. No one would give any thought to this. This, to me, a very reasonable conclusion if you watched WrestlePalooza. But because this appeared on ESPN, this was covered everywhere. And the result is you have like ESPN just under the microscope of how they're going to cover this product. And I found it interesting here because like there is almost a no-win situation if you're covering this product on ESPN. And in the same week, Andreas Hale was panned for this commentary about the WWE product. And then days prior, I mean, he had put out this story interviewing Seth Rollins and Becky Lynch about the ruse of the century with his return unexpectedly at SummerSlam.
No one knew it was coming.
Nobody knew it was coming. Like,
and there was no mention of John Pollock's reporting.
And I'm not even inserting myself into this, but it was written in the way of like the WWE's version of this story, that nobody knew about this. It shocked everybody. And he was criticized for that. So, I mean, it's like he got it on both sides over this week. And I think it's one where it's almost a no-win situation if you are going to be covering this product on ESPN, that it's, I did find it like insane though, the amount of criticism that he got for criticizing WrestlePalooza, as though like that's a bad thing.
Looking at Cage Match, it's not like his rate. Cage Match out of 209 votes is sitting at a 5.4. So grade of C.
His review here is complete. Again, if this was on any other site, this would not raise one eyebrow at all. It is only because this was on ESPN and people had gasped that this wasn't just like if he had said this was a great show, this was a perfect show. That to me would have been egregious. That would have been ridiculous.
Yes. I mean, it gives you some reassurance that despite reporting on the Seth Rollins ruse as if no one knew it was coming, Peter Rosenberg had no idea when he had dinner with Seth Rollins that he was injured. But it gives you some reassurance of what the ESPN executives said to me in response to my question, that there is some independence here. Now, are there unconscious, you know, is there, like in any power structure, is there a will to try to please and not upset the people that you know, that are around you and that have control over your company and the situations that you're in? Maybe. But if you can grade a show that's a C, that's a good sign.
You should not be complaining about this as though, like this is, like, it's, it was like people were upset that they didn't just inflate this, this opinion. To me, I don't care as much about show reviews and such like that. Like, everyone is going to have different opinions. I think the greater test of ESPN's commitment to covering WWE is going to be when we have really significant stories. And what is that coverage going to be? If honestly, Janelle Grant actually went to trial,
what was their coverage like of the Janelle Grant lawsuit before there was this deal in place?
Yeah, which, I mean, it also speaks to, like, yeah, before they were in business.
There was a little bit of it. It was fairly minimal.
Yeah, it was very minimal. And I think that's the stuff that ultimately they're going to be graded upon, because inevitably there are going to be major stories that are not.
You know what, though? That's what they should be graded on. But what's going to get more interest from the masses is something like this, where it's just a subjective opinion about a wrestling show.
Yeah, you're right.
Does a lot more effective a job of feeding tribal interests, which means feeding social media algorithms.
Yeah, and believe me, I did have sympathy for Andre. They're like digging up this guy's tweets that have been.
He also tweeted about AEW, I heard.
Like, this was just insanity. Like, my best advice would be you post your stories and stay the hell away from any comments, positive or negative, because there will be it's a no-win situation no matter what you do. In these cases. But it was just interesting that it highlighted like both sides of the coin in just a several day period, of one where he was believed it was like too pro WWE, and then this one it was too negative toward WWE.
Should we mention too what we understand about ESPN's AEW coverage, which I don't know if they covered all out. I'm trying to look, but I know there's, and it made Reddit for a while, right, that they had stopped AEW coverage around the time this deal was announced, which it turns out that happened much earlier. So yes. Not much AEW coverage from ESPN. That's true, but it does predate, who knows how long this deal is under consideration, if that had any influence, but it does predate this deal by several months.
Yeah. I mean, it was not a case of like that. You know, everyone focused on the AEW tab disappearing, which had happened a while before this deal, as well as it was described to me. And people could check like the Wayback Machine as well. Yes. For confirmation of that. So like that was not a case of this deal was announced, boom, we're taking down AEW coverage from the site. And, you know, right after that controversy, when this deal was announced, they did put up a story just highlighting the upcoming dates for AEW. But I don't know what follow-up there has been. Like, I'm just scanning here, and it's like, obviously, here in the WWE section, it's all WrestlePalooza and such.
Yeah, I'm not seeing all-out coverage on ESPN.
Let's talk a little bit about the big WrestleMania return to Las Vegas next year. We have today is the official public on sale for the two-day combo package. Brandon and I were too busy to get the get to the pre-sale on Tuesday, but if you were one of the lucky ones, you could score your two-day combo passes. PWinsider.com reporting the prices, which average out to, for both nights, $854 for two seats in the 400 section of the Allegiant Stadium, and climbs into the thousands as we get to the floor seats, where they top out at $9,000 to sit in section A1 on the floor. Is Brock Lesnar guy going to be taking out a loan on his house potentially to be able to go to WrestleMania 42 both nights?
Yeah.
This is without ticketing fees. This is without accommodations. I mean, you're looking at, like, if you want these crazy, like, even the median here, like, you're looking at a multi-$1,000 trip to go to Las Vegas, which is
the lowest ticket. The lowest ticket that we have is $854, correct?
Yes, for both nights. Yeah.
Multiply that by, let's be conservative and say they, well, let's say, I don't know, let's say they, and Allegiant Stadium can hold maybe 60,000. Let's say they only sell 55,000. So if they sell 55,000 for just one given day, I mean, we're looking at a $43 million gate, which should be, we don't know what the gate was for this year's WrestleMania. I don't know.
But it was a record. They did claim it to be a record.
They did say it was a record.
So it was above 36 million for both nights.
For both nights combined. Yes.
Combined.
Yeah. 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 So, I mean, the people still buy these tickets. The Raws and SmackDowns have seen price hikes too. Not high enough yet for Mark Shapiro. I understand there was a sign behind Paul Levesque during the post show. I think I made you aware of this,
yeah,
about complaining about TKO and its influence on high ticket prices. That did make air.
Did or did not?
There. Did make air. We have a screenshot where that was.
Yeah, I think it read TKO is greedy.
I'll look at what I sent you.
Complete with a chart of the the escalating.
Yes. Right. It's a TKO tickets.
I like the sound greedy of that.
Yes.
So, yeah, I mean, this is obviously scaled to be the largest gate in the history of pro wrestling that will probably, dwarf what they did in Philadelphia. And, you know, they're aiming to obviously top what they did this past year. And with the Saudi Arabia deal, I think it's going to enhance demand for the show with the idea that, you know, if you want to go to a WrestleMania, odds are you're not planning a trip to Saudi Arabia. This will be your last chance.
It's your last chance.
Until at least 2020.
Until who knows when.
It's a totally valid question, because Saudi Arabia goes on without a hitch. There is no guarantee that they're going to come back to the
U.S.
the following
year. If they're going to pay you, let's say, $250 million for WrestleMania, why would you do it anywhere else?
Like,
if they're willing to, of course, if the government is willing to continue to host it on a consecutive basis.
That's it. Like, if Saudi Arabia is interested, they could have WrestleMania every year. Like, there's no other part of the world that you would assume is going to pay that amount for WrestleMania. And I think the beneficiary short term is going to be this upcoming Mania in Vegas, where, you know, we've already heard about an acceleration when it comes to booking hotels. And I'm certain that they're going to get off to a fairly hot start with the tickets on sale today to the public. But they are extravagant prices, but they're also ones that they're not going to have trouble when it comes to WrestleMania. Like,
and these are probably not prices that are out of line with the general live event business. Are they out of line with W historically? Yes.
Yeah. How many, I'm sure Vince McMahon is just shaking his head at all the families that will not be able to go to WrestleMania next year.
Mm-hmm.
Brandon had reported earlier this year that last year's show, 58,538 attended night one in Vegas at Allegiant Stadium, 60,103 on night two. That was from the Las Vegas Stadium Authority, which Brandon is very familiar with.
That's right. Yes.
And
different authority. That is not the LVCVA, the Visitors and Convention.
I'm sorry.
I know there's a lot of acronyms to keep straight here, but the LVSA is different from the LVCVA.
All right, well, there you go. If anyone goes through the experience of securing WrestleMania tickets, do let us know how that goes for everybody.
Yes.
We'll keep it going, and let's talk a little bit about some viewership. So I want to talk first about this move to HBO Max. So AEW, they launched Dynamite and Collision on HBO Max back in January, and since that time, everyone has been very much anticipating when will we hear about these HBO Max numbers. And we got at least Tony Khan with some of his thoughts as he continues to be shut out of this data. He is not part of the group chat that gets the HBO Max data each week, but reflecting on these 9 months and what observations he has made before we get to some of Brandon's observations via his model.
What I think is really amazing is we've been able to grow in many cases. In many weeks, you've seen the linear audience actually growing through the year. We've had versus where we ended up last year. you know, what we had just this week for Dynamite was 667,000 P2 viewers for Dynamite, or for the Dynamite portion of September to Remember, and the really strong audience over 500,000 P2 for Collision, which was one of the strongest collisions of the year. And to see these numbers, I think it's really interesting, because it would lead me to believe, based on the correlations, that if we are growing the audience with over 50 or particularly 25 plus so much, and seeing that growth 50 plus, even a lot of them are clearly 50 to 54, because you do the calculation and you see the growth in 25 to 54 is higher than the growth in 18 to 49. I think a lot of that 18 to 49 is HBO Max. I think it skews a little younger. Honestly believe, I think there's young fans that had cut the cord the last few years that have come back to AEW. Clearly, we've seen an over 50 crowd on TBS and TNT come back since last year, because we have brought in fans. It's there. The numbers are black and white. There's been people over 50 that weren't watching last year on TBS and TNT that are. And you see that growth there. And I do think we're seeing young viewership growth.
All right. That was Tony Khan talking about the changes. And before we get into just reacting to that, I do want to go to this one question, maybe just to bring everyone in here. Brandon, why does Warner Brothers withhold streaming service numbers? Why does Tony Khan not get breakdowns of these numbers?
Because it's first party data. And the only reason why we get the Nielsen data is because it's third party data. And, well, sites like Programming Insider get that information and report it. But so Nielsen is a company that is independent of these networks, that these networks do business with, so that advertisers can buy ad time and have a third party to tell them what those numbers are. I mean, for whatever reason, they're not, you know, measuring live streaming broadcasts in the same way. So, but the question is, why does WBD keep them so secretively? I guess what I'm saying is that it's not like there's precedent for these networks, these media companies, to disclose this information in the first place. And secondly, so why wouldn't they? What is their reason? I think is largely so that they have the leverage and they have the greater understanding, and they want to control, like every company wants to do. They want to control all the information and control the message, and there's no incentive unless you're Netflix. I mean, look at Netflix has been relatively transparent. And they do post their weekly top 10, and they do post their every 6 month big data dump. But it's easier for them to do it, I suppose, because Netflix is the big winner in streaming versus everybody else, who are, you know, a big distance behind.
And I think you would argue that, you know, the HBO Max viewership, I mean, I do question, like, where does AEW find the value in this if they can't quantify what they're drawing on this when, like, you're dealing with a sponsor, for instance, that wants to know what audience are we hitting? And if Tony Khan, who I do believe is being truthful here, does not have this data, can't ascertain, like, we might be doing 5% more on HBO Max. We might be doing 15%. Like, you can't put your thumb on the scale, or you can't determine what that number is. But the offset to that is Warner Brothers sees value in HBO Max and AEW being able to enhance that service, that they were willing to pay such an amount last year for their renewal fee. And that's what it comes down to. Like, we see value of this, but we also do have the control of this data that we are not going to disclose. And AEW is sort of subservient in that situation, where they can't force this data out of them, even though I think it would be of great benefit to them to know what that audience is and to utilize it for monetary purposes.
It's a question for somebody in the advertising business in terms of, like, what are you being told? Because clearly, I mean, ads are airing on Max, including, yep, during AEW, and you're buying a number of impressions, right? So maybe it's just being reported to advertisers in some way that doesn't make it clear what a given show like AEW Dynamite is delivering. But that's what they're buying, right? Like, that's why we know about make goods. You're buying a certain number of impressions, and depending on how well the show does, that show, you know, contributes so much towards the impressions that you've bought. So it's a question for somebody in the advertising industry that, you know, maybe there's just not a full enough disclosure to make it clear to anybody in the advertising industry exactly what a given show is delivering either.
So you've looked at how the 18 to 49 audience has performed this year in comparison to years past when it comes to the percentage of overall viewership. And what, yes, have you What have you found with the linear regression model?
A big credit goes to Paul Fontaine for pointing this out to me. We can look at the data for let's just look at dynamite because collision we're not going to really look at collision here because collision is more volatile. But if we look at dynamite and say, all right, let's take the total viewership of dynamite and let's ask what percentage of that total viewership is in the much talked about demo. In this case, we're talking about 18 to 49 here. So what percentage of the whole audience is actually in the demo? And we can look at this by year and say, you know, on an average basis, it's been going down as you would expect because older people tend to be the ones who are left still watching traditional TV. In 2020, about half the audience was in the demo. In 2021, 49% was in the demo. In 2022, 47% was in the demo. In 2023, 44% was in the demo. In 2024, 43% was in the demo. So it's been going down by 1 or 2 percentage points from year to year. And then in 2025, it's down from being the low 40s to now year to date, it's down to 35% of the audiences in the demo. That's 8 percentage points down. So that is conspicuous, right? And it does align with a story about, well, guess what's happening here? There's a simulcast that started on January 1st, and maybe some of this is accounting for people watching on Max. So I did a linear regression. Here it is. We do get an R-squared of 0.458, which is a pretty strong R-squared for people at home who are watching in video. This is the plot chart. We get a 0.46 R squared, which is medium strength. And then so the application that I'm doing here is, look, we're taking into account that yes, that demo percentage was going down over time. We expect that it would have continued to go down over time to some extent had the simulcast not happened anyway. So we're not just going to take the difference in this year versus last year and say, those are all HBO Max viewers, but we're going to say, okay, we're going to make a prediction with this data to say, if the simulcast had not happened, this is the percentage of the demo audience that would have continued to be there into 2025. So that's what we've done here. Without getting deeper into the math, we end up predicting that, you know, that there's about 6% of the audience that's unaccounted for here, which more or less means in reality, we end up getting a variable amount of HBO Max viewers from week to week in terms of percent. But we basically, on the average, can say, well, it's about 6% that would be there based on prior trends that are no longer there, that it is reasonable to say, oh, maybe they're watching on HBO Max. And that gives us a year-to-date total viewership average for Dynamite of, instead of 657,000, instead of that, it's 695,000. So this isn't a huge explosion. It's not 20%. It's not 40%. But it's 6% based on. I told Paul this. I had not thought of this, and it's a good, as good an entry point as I've seen yet about how to take a stab at how many people are actually watching on Max. In terms of, can we have some mathematical support to make a reasonable argument. You could say that this is too conservative if you say, well, it's not just, so this is, I guess, only accounting for people who have migrated, right? This is arguably, you could say this. This is only accounting for people who have gone off of TBS and gone on to HBO Max. Mm-hmm. And that maybe you should be also taking into consideration the people who were not going to watch on TBS otherwise, and that there's incremental viewership on top of what you're saying here, on top of this 6%. That's also because you are opening up to more households. You know, you went from December to January, you went from being in like 68 million households to being in whatever the incremental value of HBO Max is, which is, you know, probably low tens of millions or something like that. So
you're saying people that maybe had just dropped off of watching AEW, not so much an aversion to the product, but just they had got rid of cable, or they were not watching television, and now it's on a more convenient service for them with HBO Max.
Yeah. And look, there's a number of ways to slice and dice this. I'm not saying this is definitive. This is just one way to slice the data and one way to apply a theory. I guess I feel like this is kind of the minimum, because you are at least getting to tell yourself a story about, okay, we would have expected the percentage of demo viewers to be this, but it's considerably lower. It is conspicuously lower. Mm-hmm. So we could say there's at least 6% who are watching elsewhere and are not accounted for in the traditional Nielsen measurement.
Do you have any thought toward why the 50 plus audience has shown growth on TBS this year?
Is that true?
I mean, we're seeing what's holding this up. If 18 to 49 has dropped 8%, they are making it up on an older end this year. I mean, that's kind of what Tony Khan was explaining in that clip. There was the fact that the older audience has been able to supplement some of the younger audience that has left.
I would have to check that. Okay. I could check that in a minute, but I don't know if we want to stand by while I do that.
I think it's as strong a theory as possible. When you see that jump of the decline in 18 to 49 this year, I mean, the only, there's always various reasoning you can come to, but the HBO Max introduction, I think that's as strong of a reason as you can decipher there, that there are those that would find it a lot more enticing just to watch it on HBO Max rather than on TBS. Although Tony Khan did state at the press conference, if you put a gun to his head, he would prefer to watch it on TBS because of picture-in-picture.
So the non-demo is almost completely flat year-to-date. So this is the average number of viewers, not 18 to 49. So it's mostly people 15 plus, but it could be some people, those rare people who are under 18 who are watching on traditional TV. It averaged 330,000 non-demo viewers last year. This is excluding preemptions. And now it's averaging 333. So it's a very small increase at this point.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
All right, well, there you have the demographic breakdown on AEW, and that will take us into an interesting week when it comes to the viewership, because we have stuff all over the place here. We'll go in order. So a week ago Monday, Raw aired at the earlier start time of 7 p.m. Eastern time to accommodate, they were going against a doubleheader of Monday Night Football, and the result was 2.6 million views, 5.3 million hours viewed for a 7th global ranking, 4th in the United States, 7th in Canada, and ranking in the top 10 in 12 countries worldwide. And at least for this week one comparison, it was kind of on par with what it had been doing at 8 p.m. Like, there wasn't any, nothing to me jumped out as, that would give you any kind of conclusion that this was a better or worse start time for Raw. Did you see any differently?
No, I mean, it's literally flat from the prior week.
So for everyone's sake, maybe we'll just stick with this. They're going to do 7 p.m. again next week, and then they do revert back to 8 p.m. They're doing this as a three-week trial, but that can always change. They don't need to have any advance warning to adjust this. If at the end of 3 weeks they decide, hey, let's do it at 7, they can do it at 7.
Yep.
Then we had a SmackDown on Friday in Toledo, Ohio, with a contract signing and Brock Lesnar on the show, advertised in advance. 1,342,000 viewers, a big 2% increase, and identical in the 18 to 49 demo from the week before. They were first on cable, beating college football and Fox News second for the night behind their old time slot on Fox, which also had college football. And that was SmackDown going into WrestlePalooza, a kind of standard show. And it is all dependent on the level of college football competition that's going to give them the number one ranking each week for the foreseeable future.
Yes. Yeah. The typical rating was slightly up from the prior week, which was on the lower end, but this is what it's going to be, I guess, through college football season.
And then the big test was this tailgate brawl that they were putting on TNT. This was the first time they did a pre-show before a pay-per-view on TNT. And Brandon got the numbers here. 184,000 viewers.
Is this an exclusive TV rating I have here?
You trumped Programming Insider. You trumped everyone here. 184,000 viewers and a 0.04. This is the only place you're getting this for WrestleNomics subscribers and here as well. 0.04 in the demo. And as one of our listeners mentioned in the comments, TNT has updated its schedule, and there is a tailgate brawl scheduled for right before WrestleDream at 7 p.m. So that would indicate to you that they were happy enough that they're going to do this again next month in October. But it's difficult. I don't know what TNT programming is doing on a Saturday afternoon as a comparable here, but obviously it was good enough that they're going to do this again.
Yeah, I mean, I guess this is one of the least watched collisions. Obviously, we designated this as a preemption because it started at 2 p.m. So this is one of the least watched collisions that there's ever been, but could be better than what's going on normally at 2 on a Saturday on TNT.
Yeah, we had like the two extremes this week. We had like the fourth most watched collision of the week, but it aired Wednesday right after Dynamite. It had a very convenient lead-in of its own program. And then this airing on a Saturday afternoon at the end of it all. But
they got Big 12 football coming up in October. Yeah.
And then the last one was WrestlePalooza. The international viewership we got on Netflix, they ranked in the top 10 in 25 countries worldwide. So this would account for the live viewing and then subsequent viewing in the days that followed as this chart came out on Tuesday. Of course, excludes the U.S., which airs on ESPN. That no press release, nothing from ESPN. I was curious if we would get any kind of pat on the back from ESPN on how this first show performed. But we do not know, and I would imagine these ESPN's streaming app data is we'll find out. Does Paul Levesque get access? Does Nick Khan get access to the ESPN streaming data?
Hopefully someone asks the next press conference they do, if they ever do one.
Yeah, I was going to caveat that with the big if. Maybe maybe that'll be the job. Maybe Big E will put him on the spot at the next post show.
Yeah, I mean, for what? Some 60% of the country? I mean, really more than that, because I'm just saying 60% of the cable universe, the ESPN universe, for most of the country in the United States, this was essentially a pay-per-view. I'm not sure. I can't tell you what you're getting on the ESPN app other than WWE. If you're a cord cutter, you are getting access to ESPN channels, which perhaps you do not have, which you did not have in the first place if you're a cord cutter. But this is kind of a $30 pay-per-view.
And to recap, you said this last week, you were able to, you're a YouTube TV subscriber. You yes. could log into this ESPN Unlimited app to watch yes. Monday Night Football last week, but
yes.
you could not watch WrestlePalooza.
Which I might have figured if I was not covering this and, you know, asking questions to ESPN PR, I might have just figured, okay, I was able to authorize in. Maybe I do get access to WrestlePalooza.
I would make that assumption if I was you. If I could log in on Monday and watch programming on this app, I would just assume that I would get all programming on this app. That would be my thought.
Yeah, I just tested and I was able to live stream Monday Night Football, but that is not the same as apparently it's not the same deal apparently as getting access to WrestlePalooza. But it may become part of these deals going forward as these deals get renewed, which it sounds like they're getting renewed sometime in Q4 here. As John punches his microphone.
I just took out my microphone here trying to make sense of all of this. Yeah, and then they've also announced, so ESPN Plus is now ESPN Select.
Is it?
Never better. Yes, they have rebranded this. So you have ESPN Unlimited, ESPN Select, and ESPN Select, which again used to be ESPN Plus, is now introducing a price hike on top of it, like what a mess. That is all I can say. As someone that is really glad that I don't have to deal with any of this. And I mean, it's been such a quiet week as well for Disney and its streaming properties that, yes.
I don't know. I did turn on Brusselpalooza. To do that though, I did fly to the United Kingdom on my private transportation vehicle.
Oh yeah, did you surf with a shark to obtain that that travel?
No, I
Stephanie McMahon would encourage you to support.
I did not surf with a shark. I did not quite do that. I did some other form of private internet travel.
Hall of Fame inductee Stephanie McMahon.
Yeah, I heard about that. Yes, it must have been a big deliberative process.
Who inducts Stephanie into the Hall of Fame, Brandon?
It's got to be Triple H, right?
You think so?
Who else would? Who else? Like, where do you get like other candidates? Even Vince? Maybe you bring that. Maybe that's when you bring Vince back.
I give Vince McMahon like a 10-15% chance of being the one that's
maybe you wait until next year in Saudi Arabia to bring Vince back.
Well, Vince could be inducted in Saudi Arabia. Next year is just the slow. Yes. Let's be honest, okay? Vince McMahon walks out at the Hall of Fame in Las Vegas. What reception do you think he's getting?
Especially if it's a surprise, which is if you wanted to,
you could massage do it that this. Way.
You definitely don't want to, because it's a negative. There's a lot of gross negative in there to announce in advance, because it's going to cause all this bad PR and criticism. So you just do it as a surprise. No Chance in Hell starts playing. Everybody's shocked and cheers.
Everyone would be on their feet.
That's exactly what would happen.
That's what would happen. And he could be inducted in Saudi Arabia by Turkey. Yeah.
By Turkey.
By Turkey. Yeah. Who else?
Perfect.
So there you go. Those are
that is his father, in fact. So.
Yes, depending on how you parse that language. Just wrapping up on the ESPN discussion for the app. How would you say this rollout went for week one? Again, we don't know exactly any data attached to the viewing, but like it became very clear if you watched Raw, where it just felt as though it almost felt like you figure it out. We're going to be on the ESPN app. You guys figure it out. And then by Friday, they realized, man, we need to really hit this hard. They did multiple segments with R-Truth, literally explaining how to download this app, what carriers it's available on. They never told you it would cost you money. I think they wanted to avoid that topic. And then they had Cody go through all the four ways of which you could get WrestlePalooza as well. So they tried to hit this hard on SmackDown, and I was limited to what I could see on X and such. Like, I certainly saw a lot of people that were upset about learning of this $30 fee that was attached to it. But would you say this rollout largely went average? Was there?
I think it was an impossible task, given the lack of distribution, given the fragmented distribution. It's like trying to watch Jimmy Kimmel, but worse.
Yeah.
I was bombarded with advertising about this. Now, I was watching a fair amount of ESPN during this week, but also like every time I scrolled on Reddit, I saw an ad about this, which I imagine was unique to me because I'm in the US.
I think the promotion of this, like they promoted the hell out of this all week on their programming. They had so much talent on every single show. I certainly can't dismiss the amount of promotion that they put into this. But I didn't feel like this achieved the level that like the Netflix launch did, where like that felt like a massive, massive deal. And partially I say this as someone that's in Canada that doesn't get ESPN either, that there is a difference there.
Is TSN going to copy this and go direct to consumer?
They do have the option that you can.
That's how you used to have to watch Rampage, right?
That's the only way you can watch Collision. You have to have their direct to consumer service.
Yeah, but I think this. I mean, and their choice. I mean, clearly there was a deliberate choice to do this earlier rather than later, which I don't know if that was the best decision. Because originally this was announced that this was going to start sometime in 2026, and I assumed it was going to start when the Peacock deal expires, which I assumed was in March of next year. By which time, these carriage deals, probably including Comcast and YouTube TV, would have been renewed, and presumably the ESPN Unlimited app access would have been included in those renewal packages, and then more of the country would have been able to watch it. There would have been less confusion about it. But they decided, I guess, because this thing just launched, that they want to get WWE on it right away.
All right, let's talk a little bit before we wrap up about the UFC at the White House and the MMA draw. They had put out an article earlier this week talking about who's going to pay for this thing. This is going to be a costly endeavor by, pardon the pun, for the UFC to stage an event on the White House grounds. It is now tentatively set for June in concert with the 250th anniversary of the United States of America. And it looks like there is a committee that has been formed. What is this called? America 250. What are you familiar with when it comes to America 250? And Brandon, are you indirectly helping to pay for this event?
It sounds like this is going to be that Congress. This is part of the U.S. Semi-Quincentennial Commission, which was established by Congress in 2016 to plan and orchestrate the 250th anniversary of the signing of the Declaration of Independence. It was appointed by the House and Senate leadership. There are numerous commissioners who are in charge of this committee. It's what, some 16 private citizens, 4 U.S. representatives, 4 senators, and 12 ex officio members, yada, yada. So we've got Marco Rubio here. We've got former Supreme Court Justice Anthony Kennedy. We've got Pete Hegseth, the Secretary of Defense. Should I call him the Secretary of War? I don't know. We've got Pam Bondi, the Attorney General out here. We've got some members of Congress. And that's all that our audience
would be familiar
with. That's all our audience would be familiar with from these commissioners. Linda McMahon, the Secretary of Education, is also a member of this committee.
Is that the same Linda McMahon?
I think that is the same Linda McMahon. This is her Trump Term 1 promo photo, I think.
So this is essentially seeking government funds that they are going to be able to allocate towards this 250th celebration next summer, one of which would be the UFC that would be seeking funds from this. Is that a general interpretation of what is being sought out here?
It seems like it. Now, you can do a control F for this big document that apparently came out at the beginning of the year, and there's no mention of Ultimate Fighting Championship or anything like that. But one would think that this is where the money will come from.
More to come at the top of the hour. America 250. Well, we will follow the money trail here of what the UFC will gain from this. I imagine they'll bring in a tidy profit from America's birthday party.
So this does look like a nonprofit separate organization that is authorized by Congress, but is not a government agency. So I don't know if they'll be subject to a FOIA, but something to watch going forward.
I'm sure it'll be a trickle down too to the fighters. Like, they'll benefit from this too, right?
As always, yes.
They're the ones that are going to be
they'll get 50%,
of course. All right, and the last thing we'll note is just an update on the Raja Jackson situation, which did see an arrest last Thursday. Raja Jackson, the son of Quentin Rampage Jackson, he was arrested by the LAPD on Thursday and is facing a felony charge for his attack on Psycho Stew last month at the Knox Pro event in California. TMZ reporting that Jackson was booked on a felony charge of battery with serious bodily harm, but is now out. Bond was set at $50,000, and I have yet to see when he is scheduled for his next court appearance, but definitely now the ball is in motion.
He is out on bond because to the Inmate Information Center for where he's being held, and it says that his total bail amount is $50,000. It does list him in this inmate database, but maybe he has already been released.
So yeah, that's he's facing a felony, and it took a while. Like, this took almost a month for an arrest to occur, but anyway, we have a wrestling related.
He was arrested on last Thursday. It says he was arrested on the 18th.
All right. That is going to bring us to the end of our topics. Was there anything else, Brandon, on the docket?
Not really. We're continuing to litigate. I'm continuing to litigate with Las Vegas Convention and Visitors Authority. They're not participating so far. So hopefully we'll get some information sooner than later, but it could be several weeks now before we get records related to government agency Las Vegas Convention Visitors Authority working relationship with WWE through WrestleMania and next year's WrestleMania.
Thurston VL Las Vegas, we will continue to cover here. These are records that Brandon is subject to be given, and they are.
And we are also, don't worry, we're also pursuing records in Texas. My old friend Ken Paxton is probably helping us out with that as it relates to AEW All In.
Yeah, guys, he wants records from everyone, okay? Everyone under the sun, okay? Don't try and draw a line between the two companies as well. Okay, that's going to wrap up the show. We thank everyone for joining us live here on another edition of Pollock and Thurston. I hope my voice held up okay over the last 60 minutes. I'm not going to be doing any screaming at crowds in between matches or promising to bring events back every single month. But we will be back next Wednesday at 1 p.m. Eastern time, where WrestleNomics and post-wrestling come together each and every Wednesday. On Thursday, for our members at the Post Wrestling Cafe on the at the Double Double and Espresso level, I'm not going to go through all the ways you can download the app, but it's very simple. We are going to be chatting about the Bret Hart book on this month's edition of Book Club. Myself and Neil Flanagan, we have read Bret Hart's book, and we're going to chat about the Calgary Native on Thursday. So you can check out all of that. And then tonight I'm back with Wei Ting after Dynamite. Subject to my health. I might collapse during Dynamite, so it might be a solo effort from Wei Ting if that happens. But that is all coming up in the next 24 hours. Brandon's work can be found at WrestleNomics.com, dropping the latest and greatest. The man not only has collision numbers from Saturday that no one else has, but the quarter-hour breakdown of the tailgate brawl.
All 15 quarter hours are there for subscribers. Regardless of whether or not you have access to ESPN, you will need to sign up to get behind the paywall. So, yes.
And I want to say a big thank you to all the listeners I ran into at the Scotiabank Arena over the weekend. I ran into many of our listeners, one of which just came up to me and said, thank you so much for talking about Janelle Grant. And I said, well, we're trying our best. We're trying our best to cover this wild industry. So that's going to wrap it up. Thanks to everyone in the live chat, and we'll speak with you next Wednesday.